Russia, even though he was blind physically, became the guardian or custodian of the throne, waiting for the Pandavas to grow up. But of course, Dhritarashtra was attached to his own son, first son of Dhritarashtra, he had 100 sons, he was very attached to them. And because of that, he was prone to be influenced by Duryodhana, who was envious of the Pandavas and was very ambitious to be his successor. And he wanted his father to favor him instead of the Pandavas. In other words, he wanted his father to be to violate his oath to protect the Pandavas and transfer the kingdom to them when they came of age. So Duryodhana badgered his father, and his father finally agreed to invite Yudhisthira and Pandavas back a second time to Gyan. And Yudhisthira agreed, knowing well what was going to happen, and the inevitable happened. Again, Sakuni cheated, and they lost. This time, they lost their wife, they lost their kingdom, and they had to go into exile, 12 years, and an extra year, 13th year, remaining incognito. Well, when they lost their wife, Duryodhana, in a very unabashed and very low-class way, insisted on her being forced out of her room and come in front of the assembly of all these big men, including Bhishma, Pitta, Mahama, Dhritarashtra, and so forth, and be stripped naked. And Dushasan grabbed her by the hair and dragged her out. And this was extremely insulting. It's violated completely the principles of dharma. And he tried to strip her by pulling off her sari. And she realized that no one else could help her except Krishna. Her husband could not do anything because they lost him. Dhritarashtra did not do anything. Even Bhishma Pitamaha, who knew perfectly the principles of dharma, he was duty bound not to do anything. So Draupadi prayed to Krishna, "Hey Bhagavan, Krishna, please help me." And she was holding on her sari with one hand and praying with the other. And then she realized the futility of holding on with one hand. So she completely surrendered to the Lord by opening both hands up and praying to the Lord. And at that point, because of her complete surrender, as Krishna says, Sarvadharma Pritya, Mamekam Saranam Prasa, Aham Tvam Sarvapapi, Moksi Syam Masucha, I explained to Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita, give up all your dharmas, whatever they are, and surrender unto me. Dharmas, in this case, meaning duties, religious duties, or whatever. And surrender unto me. Because surrendering to Krishna is the highest principle of dharma. And in return, Krishna says, Aham tvam sarva papyebhyo moksi syami masucha. I will protect you from any sinful reactions incurred in the process of serving me. So, Draupadi completely surrendered to the Lord, and the Lord made her sari infinitely long, and Duryodhana was not even a stripper. They failed. But at that point, Bhima made a vow in front of everyone that he would tear off the arm of Dushasan in the future and drink his blood in public, and he would dare anyone to try and stop him from doing it. And he did exactly that during the Battle of Kurukshetra. Although he could not do it at that point because he was duty-bound to listen to his older brother Yudhisthira. So we see, even though the Pandavas could have begun to fight and probably would have defeated the Kurus right there, Yudhisthira, who is also called Dharmaraj, he would not let them do it because of respect for his uncle, Dhritarashtra, and also he would never act against the principles of dharma. So, this is all very interesting. We cannot understand what real Vedic culture is until we carefully study the Ramayana and the Mahabharata, and we can learn what is the standard of behavior for civilized people. Anyway, this verse and the verses in the fourth chapter are explaining how one can detach themselves from material attachments. Material attachments means there's two weaknesses of the heart. The first weakness of the heart is the desire to own, control, and exploit nature for one's own personal benefit. That is the reason why we're in this world. At one point, we revolted against Krishna in the spiritual world, and we decided to emulate him or be his competitor. Now, we can't do that in the spiritual world. So the material world is a place where we can pretend to try and emulate Krishna by owning, controlling, exploiting material nature for our own selfish purposes. When we do that, when we begin that endeavor, we give up completely devotional service and spiritual duties. We're too busy trying to make money, trying to control, trying to exploit, trying to enjoy. And once we begin to control something and exploit it, we become attached to it. So people buy houses, cars, iPhone, iPad, this thing, that thing, Xbox, and they become attached to these things. And it consumes our time and energy, and it takes our mind away from Krishna. And so the two weaknesses of the heart is the desire to own, control, exploit nature, and in the process we give up devotional service to God. And second point is, once we own and control things, we become attached to them. I remember my brother, he collected newspaper articles for 40 years. So his house was full of newspapers. And he never looked at them, he just collected them. You know, I asked him, are you going to look at them? So one day I'll archive. He never did, of course. His whole house was, and he was attached to these newspapers. He collected them for 40 years. And he's not going to really use them in any way. So, you see, people become attached to things. Just like even a little child becomes attached to a pillow or a teddy bear or a bed sheet. And that type of attachment weakens our resolve to engage in devotional service. So the entire Bhagavad Gita is directed to help us, just like Krishna is helping Arjuna, detach himself from false material attachments. Why do we say they're false? Because there's sat and asat. What is eternal is real, and what is temporary is false. So everything we see, this carpet, this marble floor, wood carvings, these things are temporarily real only. One day they'll all disappear. So having a strong attachment to these things is eventually going to be defeated, because they will eventually disappear. Just like the clothing we have, the car we have, the house we have. I remember once I asked my mother, I said, would you like to go back to the old country where you were born? I'll take you. You can see the old house and where your family used to live. She said, no, I don't want to go. I said, why not? Why should I go? She said, all those people are dead. I left there 60 years ago. It'll just bring back memories and just pain in my heart to think about it. I don't want to go. But that's the point. Everything in the material world would end up being simply a memory, because everything's going to be taken away from us, especially at the moment of death. So if our memory is cluttered with all attachments to temporary material things, we will not be able to achieve liberation or mukti from the cycle of birth and death. We'll have to come back again and continue those cycle of attachments. So therefore, the Bhagavad Gita is teaching four types of yoga practice, different types, according to people's preference, to detach the mind from false material attachments. And that is, Krishna explains the Bhagavad Gita karma yoga, where you take material things and you offer them to God. And he offers back to you those things. And then now you have a choice what to do with them. Either you use them again for your selfish purpose, or you use them, as we do here, to help others. So here, we're always getting some donations. With those donations, we maintain the temple and we distribute prashadam every day. We have classes, we have kirtans. All these things are not for any individual's personal benefit. It's for the outreach to help others reorient their mind from material attachment to understanding something about Krishna and devotional service. So this is, you could call this a seva ashram, a place, a spiritual place, where people come and they can offer their service to Krishna. And Krishna is very generous. He says that for those who serve me with love and devotion and who are always thinking about me, I give them the knowledge by which they come back. So, Krishna reciprocates with anyone who becomes a seva, a servant of the Lord, by yoga shema vaham nyam. He makes Krishna consciousness easily available, just like in this temple, Krishna consciousness is easily available. Secondly, he protects the devotee from falling down. That's yoga and shema. Yoga means Krishna consciousness, shema means protection of the Lord. And in the same way, part of his protection is he supplies whatever is necessary for the devotee to maintain himself or herself in devotional service. So, therefore, there's a reciprocal relationship that begins when one begins to serve Krishna. Just like there was a reciprocal relationship between Draupadi and Krishna. When Draupadi saw that her husband could not help her, she depended completely on Krishna, and Krishna came to the rescue. Not only once, many times he rescued Draupadi. When Durvasa Muni visited the Pandavas while they were in exile, he was asked by Duryodhana to visit them after lunch. They had a special magic pot that would cook enough food for as many guests as they wanted to entertain, but only once a day at lunchtime. And then you'd have to wait again 24 hours. So Duryodhana, knowing this, sent Durvasa Muni with 60,000 of his followers to visit the Pandavas in exile, and they came exactly after lunch. So this was a dilemma for the Pandavas, because Durvasa Muni is known to have a very quick and nasty temper. Although he's an exalted yogi, he still sometimes becomes very angry and he can do very nasty things. So when they came, when Durvasa Muni came, Yudhisthira requested, "Dear sage, dear Muni, please take your bath first, and then come back and we'll feed you." So he was trying to gain time. So Durvasa Muni goes to the river to bathe with all his followers, and the Pandavas huddled together trying to figure out what to do. Their pot is not going to cook again for 24 hours. They can't feed 60,000 people. If they don't feed them, Durvasa Muni will become very upset. Again, Draupadi prayed to Krishna. Krishna was in Hastinapura, the Pandavas were way out in a distant place. Krishna immediately understood Draupadi's prayer and appeared in front of him and asked what the problem was. And Draupadi explained. And he said, "Don't worry." He said, "Let me see the pot." They said, "Well, the pot's, we're washing the pot right now." He said, "Don't wash the pot, I'm going to see it." And when he looked at the pot, he said, "There's a little bit of sabji left in the bottom of the pot, I'm going to eat that." He said, no, don't do that. That was already served out. He said, "No, I want some of this prasad. It's very special." So when he took a little piece of that sabji that was left in the pot and he tasted it, immediately the stomachs of Durvasa Muni and all his followers became full. Krishna says, "Patram pushpam phalam tuham yogi bhakti prachi tadham bhakti paratam asami prayatatmana. Offer me with love and devotion a leaf, water, fruit, and flower, and I will accept it." So when he accepted that little bit of sabji that was left over, he became satisfied, and so did Durvasa Muni and 60,000 followers. Then, when they finished bathing, Durvasa Muni said, "We will not go back to the Pandavas. We will continue on our journey." And they said, "Why?" He said, "I don't know." He said, "I feel full. Do you feel full?" Everyone said, "Yes." If we go back, I know how Bema is. He'll force us to eat. He'll keep bringing more and more food. And if we say no, he'll take his gada and beat us. So better we don't go back. So they left. You see, Krishna saved Draupadi many times, not just once or twice. Many times he saved her. He saved Arjuna and the Pandavas. So this reciprocal relationship begins when we take up devotional service. As Krishna promises, he says, declare it boldly, Arjuna, that my devotee will never perish. And so, do we believe Krishna or not? Well, the Pandavas believe Krishna, and Krishna kept his promise. And Hanuman believed Ram. Ram kept his promise, protected Hanuman. So why should we not? If he keeps his promise for Hanuman and Arjuna, why should he not keep his promise for us? Shripad Bhavati Dharamat Mahasatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvatsvats cursed, he quickly becomes righteous. That is, a person who is always engaged in Krishna consciousness quickly becomes righteous and attains lasting peace. O son Kunti, declare it boldly that my devotee never perished. Okay, so now we come back to this verse, and the purport, as my grace Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada says, 4th chapter, 29th verse, this system of yoga for controlling the breathing process is called pranayama. And in the beginning, it's practiced in the Hatha Yoga system through different sitting postures. All of these processes are recommended for controlling the senses and for advancing in spiritual realization. This practice involves controlling the airs within the body so as to reverse the directions of their passage. The apana air goes downward and the prana air goes upward. The pranayama yogi practices breathing the opposite way until the currents are neutralized into puraka or equilibrium. Offering the exhaled breath into the inhaled breath is called vichara. When both air currents are completely stopped, one is said to be in kumbhaka yoga. By practice of Kumbhaka Yoga, one can increase the duration of life for perfection and spiritual realization. The intelligent yogi is interested in attaining perfection in one life without waiting for the next. For by practicing Kumbhaka Yoga, the yogis increase the duration of life by many, many years. A Krishna conscious person, however, being always situated in the transcendental loving service of the Lord, automatically becomes the controller of the senses. His senses, being always engaged in the service of Krishna, have no chance of becoming otherwise engaged. So at the end of life, he is naturally transferred to the transcendental plane of Lord Krishna. Consequently, he makes no attempt to increase his longevity. He is at once raised to the platform of liberation, as stated in the Bhagavad Gita, 14th chapter, 26th verse, Mam Chayo Vipichara, Bhakti Yoga Nisaya. One who engages in unworthy devotional service to the Lord transcends the modes of material nature and is immediately elevated to the spiritual platform. A Krishna conscious person begins from the transcendental stage, and he or she is constantly in that consciousness. Therefore, there is no falling down, and ultimately he enters into the abode of the Lord without delay. The practice of reduced eating is automatically done when one eats only Krishna prasadam, or food which is offered first to the Lord. Reducing the eating process is very helpful in the matter of sense control. And without sense control, there is no possibility of getting out of the material entanglement. So here's a beautiful verse. The goal is to control the senses and the mind and transfer them to Krishna's service, transfer using them to Krishna's service rather than using them for sense gratification. There are different processes for doing it. Obviously, the mystic process of pranayama is not practicable for the majority of people. Who's going to be able to swallow their tongue, reverse the currents of air in the body, and hold them neutralized in the esophagus? It's not possible. Only a very few rare people can do it. But the same thing is accomplished by chanting Hare Krishna and always being engaged in devotional service under the tutelage of a bona fide spiritual master or masters. The same thing as verse 14.26, chapter 14.26 says, Manche Rupi Pacharyana Bhakti Yogi Sivate. For one who engages completely in devotional service, 24/7, to the Lord, transcends the modes of material nature. So, Sagunam Samatityaitam, they rise above goodness, passion, and ignorance, and their influence on us. And immediately is elevated to the spiritual platform, Brahmabhuyaya Kalpa. When it comes to the level of Brahman. Brahman means Brahma Bhutta Prasanna Naso Sutina Kamsutina. Samatsare Sukhute Su Mapa Kimbapite Param. Let's take a look at that verse, 18th chapter, 54th verse. A very important verse. It says, one who is thus transcendentally situated at once realizes the Supreme Brahman and becomes joyful. He never laments or desires to have anything. He is equally disposed toward every living entity. In that state, he attains pure devotional service unto me. So the symptom of one who is still attached to the material world is sochati and kamshati. Sochati means hankerings, all kinds of desires. And kamshati means lamenting because one has not achieved the desires or one has lost something that they had. So this is a description of material life. Either one is desiring to have something, or one is lamenting after losing something. And that's the story of material life. But a devotee rises above that by always being engaged in the service of the Lord and being friendly to all living entities. The devotee never becomes his enemy's enemy. So Ram was never really Ravana's enemy. But he helped Ravana by killing him. By killing him, Ravana attained liberation in the cycle of birth and death. So Ram's killing and somebody else's killing are not equal. The Lord is always merciful, even to the demons. So it says here that in the 12th chapter, 13, 14 verse, Adveshta Sarvabhutana. Adveshta means one is not envious of any living entity. Maitra Kaguna Evacha. He's a friend to everyone, so he doesn't become his enemy's enemy. Or Samat Sarve Sibute Su, or Maitra Kaguna Evacha is the same meaning. He's friendly to every living entity. So in this way, he becomes free of the false ego, false proprietorship, falsely claiming ownership over something, nirmama, nirahankara, and he's steady in both happiness and dread, distress, fame and infamy, heat and cold, riches and poverty. All these dualities do not affect the devotee, because the devotee will continue in devotional service despite all the dualities of life. Okay, so this is a quick understanding of this verse. When we come to Krishna consciousness and we strictly follow, we are quickly elevated to the transcendental plane. Brahmabhuyaya Kalpate. It's only when we're free of the influence of Sati, Rajas, and Tamas, goodness, passion, and ignorance, that we can begin devotional service. As long as we're affected by these modes, the service is mixed. It's karma mishra bhakti. It's not pure bhakti, sudha bhakti. Mishra, it's mixed with selfish goals. But when we come to the level of Suddha Bhakti or Visuddha Sattva, at that point we are transcendental. We're no longer affected by the dualities of the material world or by any sinful reaction because Krishna will protect us. We, of course, we don't commit any sins. What are the four pillars of sins? Meat eating, gambling, and philosophical speculation. Intoxication and illicit connections outside of marriage. Those are the four pillars of sinful life. The devotee gives those four things up happily. Those four things are the cause of trouble in life. They're not the cause of happiness. So we'll stop right there. Are there any questions anyone wants to ask? Goodness, there's transcendental goodness and mundane goodness, right? Just like the United States gives a lot of foreign aid, right? But at a price. So it's not pure goodness. There's an expectation of, you know, our allies being, or the people that get foreign aid from being loyal to us. With us at the UN or giving us special contracts. After we blow them up, giving us a contract, we rebuild them. Yeah, there is sattva, visuddha sattva. Sattva is mundane goodness, visuddha sattva is transcendental goodness.
So if you're not aware of these two means to goodness or righteousness, then how could one not be attained in philosophical?
I understand your question. That's why we need a bona fide spiritual master, right? Because there's a very important verse, you can learn this verse, Tapavatu Mahabhapu. Tuna Karma Vibhaga, Tuna Gune Savartan, Tapitima Pana Sajite. Very important verse, you know. Just find it. A person who is advanced in Krishna consciousness can differentiate between materially inspired activities and Krishna conscious activities. And that verse is in third chapter, 28th verse. This is a key verse. Unless you can differentiate which is material with activity that's materially inspired from activity which is pure devotion, you will always be confused in life. So this verse says, one who is in knowledge of absolute truth, Almighty Maharaj Arjuna, does not engage himself in the senses and sense gratification, knowing well the differences between work and devotion and work for fruitive results. And in the purport, Srila Prabhupada says, the knower of the absolute truth is convinced of his proper position in material association. He knows that he is part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, and that his position should not be in the material creation. He knows his real identity as part and parcel of the Supreme, who is eternal bliss and knowledge. And he realizes that somehow or other he is entrapped in the material conception of life. So, for example, some people will argue, I'm Latino, that's what I'll say. I'm American, not Latino. Someone says, I'm African American. Someone says, I'm an Italian American. Right? Both of those adjectives are wrong. I'm a spirit soul, the eternal servant of Krishna. That's correct. Italian American, what does it mean I'm Italian American when the next life I'm born as a cockroach in Africa? Does it mean anything? Does it mean anything at all? So being Italian American is not my identity. My identity is Jivara Swarupa Pahai Nidhira Krishna Das. I'm the eternal servant of Krishna. That's who I actually am. So, as long as we have a false, and it says here, the devotee knows his real identity as part and parcel of the Supreme. It's not that he's part and parcel of this material nature or a particular country or a particular ethnicity or a particular race. And Krishna is the Supreme who is eternal bliss and knowledge, and he realizes that somehow or other he is entrapped in the material conception of life. In his pure state of existence, he is meant to dovetail his activities in devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. In other words, all the activities we perform, we're dovetailing. Dovetailing means we're connecting it, we're uniting with Krishna through that activity. So someone sweeps the street, and then he gets his money and goes to the Mukulteer Casino, and then goes to a bar, and then goes to Safeway and buys meat and fish and eggs and salamis and things like that, and engages in illicit activities. Okay, but The other sweeper in the street is a toady. After work, he comes to the temple. He doesn't go to the casino. He offers some donation to the temple. He cleans, he washes the floor, washes the dishes. You know, or a lady will make garlands or something. So he's dovetailing his activities into Krishna consciousness, whereas the materialists are using their activities to further their agenda, advance their agenda for dominating, controlling, enjoying, exploiting the material nature. So he therefore engages himself in the activities of Krishna consciousness and becomes naturally unattached to the activities of the material senses, which are all circumstantial and temporary. He knows that his material condition of life is under the supreme control of the world. Consequently, he is not disturbed by all kinds of material reactions, which he considers to be the mercy of the Lord. According to Srimad Bhagavatam, one who knows the absolute truth in three different features, namely Brahman, Paramatma, and the Supreme Personality, is called Tattvabhidhi. A person who knows the Tattva, the truth. For he knows also his own factual position in relationship with the Supreme. That's the answer. There are weapons of mass destruction, but today we have weapons of mass disinformation. All right? That's the summary. So you have to decide which, you know, you want to come in contact with bona fide knowledge, or you want to just be in the realm of misinformation for the rest of your life. So that's a decision we have to make. I think you've made that. You don't want to be in the realm of misinformation. You want to get bona fide knowledge. Bona fide knowledge means the triangle of verification is always in play. Right? There's Krishna and his words, meaning scripture. There's previous recognized saints and acharyas. And there's the present gurus, Sikshan Diksha gurus. If they confirm or validate each other, you know it's true. If our triangle is closed, you know it's true. It all depends on learning Bhagavad Gita. If you learn Bhagavad Gita, that's Krishna's direct words. Then you read the previous saints, they confirm it. They don't say anything different. And if the present guru is saying the same thing and doesn't contradict it, then the triangle is closed. You know it's the truth. Chapter verses 8 to 12. worry about that. You change, you cross the bridge, then you teach others to cross the bridge. If you don't cross the bridge, there's no hope for the others either. So you have a chance, you cross the bridge. Then you can help others cross the bridge. You're not, just by stating the problem over and over again, you're not going to solve it. Everyone does that. They state the problem over and over again. They become experts at stating the problem, so expert that they never get to solving the problem. Here, we engage in solving. We know what the problem is. We forgot Krishna. We revolted against Krishna. We became attracted by Maya, and we're entrapped. Okay, we don't have to document that with big volumes. What we have to do is spend our time now getting out. Just like if you caught the fire, forest fire, and you're surrounded by fire, and you sit down on a log and you say, until I figure out how I got stuck here, I'm not going to move. Oh, that means you're dead. If you have any energy at all, you have to run as fast as you can to get out of that fire. Then later you can figure out, how did I get in there in the first place? So don't try and state the problem 1,000 times over and over again. Now you have a chance to solve the problem. So use all your energy to solve it. Stating the problem over and over again is not going to do anything. You know what it is. Everybody has different senses. Everyone's influenced differently by the modes of material nature. Therefore, they have millions of different concepts, and all of them are wrong. So why even talk about it anymore? Now you work on purifying your consciousness completely of all these misconceptions. And then you become a beacon of hope for others. You become an expert. You're no longer going to be tricked by Maya's tricks. Therefore, you're in a position to help others. You're objective. Okay? Stating the problem over and over again is not going to get us anywhere. Or get you anywhere. What you need now is, yeah. That's why you have guru.
Yeah.
Guru, you don't have to study the dictionary for the next 4 years to figure out what the right meaning is. Guru gives you the right meaning. You simply have to hear from a bona fide authority. You don't have to experiment. You don't have to extrapolate. You don't have to interpret. You don't have to expostulate. You simply listen and repeat. As long as you're convinced that the teacher is bona fide. Now, the teacher is Prabhupada, not me. I'm simply trying to repeat what he says. That's why we're reading Bhagavad Gita together. Right? If I say anything different, you reject that. It has to be backed up by Shastra and Prabhupada's words and example. As long as we're in the realm of bona fide repeating, we're safe. There's not going to be any mistake. As soon as we deviate from it, we're in Lala Land, a gray area where nothing is certain. Okay? So you're in a different area now. It's not like outside, where everyone's speculating, everyone has imperfect senses, everyone has different concepts. We all have a consensus understanding of philosophy.
Yeah. My philosophy.